might want to take a couple of deeper breaths into the nose, out through your mouth. And just let the breath settle. On the out breath, just have the idea of letting go in the leg, particularly in the upper leg. It's just imagining giving the weight of those big bones and muscles up to gravity. Imagining that they gently pull towards the center of the earth. Quite nice to remember that the earth goes down thousands of miles below you, has this molten core. As you breathe in and out, just bringing the attention into the contact, whatever it is you're sitting on. If you're on a chair, make sure your feet are flat on the floor. However you're sitting there, your hips should always be a little bit above the knees. Sometimes find people sitting with their knees up. It's not really very good. It makes it very difficult to release fully. And the hips. Releasing the legs, and as we release the legs, imagine releasing the crown of the head upward, as if you're very gently pushing the back of the head up towards the ceiling. By extension, the sky. Trying to get a sense of very gently just letting in the back of the body. Allow the legs and the pelvis to relax down. A little bit of space in your armpits there. Then. Imagine your armpits as little caves. Let's see if we can have a sense of how the spine connects the pelvis to the skull. So while the breath is perhaps more obvious in the front, in the belly, in the diaphragm, and the chest, there's also quite a bit of movement in the back as we breathe. Even a little bit of movement in the spine, particularly in the lower spine. A bit of movement in the pelvic floor. Just see what you can find going on in the back of your body. Quite a distinct movement in the scapula there, the shoulder blade. Yeah. Breathe in and out. See if we can get the back of the body sort of breathing a little bit. Broadening the upper torso as we breathe. So we spend most of our time with our attention kind of in front of us. It's quite nice when we meditate to have a bit more awareness of the back. Just notice what it feels like to be a bit more aware of the back of you. Back of your head, back of the neck, back down the torso, back of the pelvis, tucking under. The pelvic floor. face relax a bit more if you can. While you're doing this, let's just imagine that we're sort of as we breathe in and out, the kind of secondary energetic breath that we can take. We're going to imagine horizontally through the body. Through the heart area. Imagine breathing in through the back of the heart. Breathing out through the front of the heart. Breathing in through the front of the heart. Breathing out through the back of the heart. Breathing in through the back. Out through the front. In through the front. Out through the back. And so on. And we'll just link this to our normal breathing. just keeping the posture and just stop trying to do anything at all. What happens when you have no intention at all? World keeps welding, the body keeps breathing, heart keeps beating, trace our hand us over to Bodhilila. Is that, I don't know.
Thank you, Paramananda. Yes, I am here. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so, yeah, open space to share. Doesn't have to be question and answers, can be sharing or just observing, noticing. And it would be quite nice if people were sharing some things that they've experienced on the retreat so far, during a practice or in response to one of the talks or chanting or whatever. And I'd just like to invite anyone who's not spoken in the bigger group, if you'd like to share something or ask something. Zoe.
Yeah, I just wanted to share how disturbing the wind has been. It's a few people in my group mentioned just the sheer strength and power of the air and the difference it's had from Sunday night to now has been, it's just been very interesting to note I'm just thinking about the top of a lake, just very disturbed by the wind, kind of how that's been. And all that air, the power of all that air, I suppose. Anyway, thank you.
So it sounds like that's had an effect on your mind, your mental states.
Well, they always say pets and small children, when it's windy, get very stimulated. It's incredibly enlivening. And I was definitely like that. Particularly last night here in London, it was really, yeah, very all our focus in the house was about the wind and what was going on, and we spent most of the evening watching, and it was just hearing its effect. So just that idea of the power of the breath within, but also just aware of the power of, just power of the wind has been really, really interesting to notice. I think it's always interesting when you get into retreat, noticing how the elements are available and kind of all pervasive.
I'm aware we were talking a bit about the medium of air. You're breathing in, breathing out. This is where we're living in. And that was sort of, when I was thinking about that, I was thinking of it as being more, well, it's not static. It's never static, isn't it? But not as turbulent as it has been last night and today, is it? We sometimes talk about our emotional weather, don't we? And I think there's something in us, I think, that responds on quite an archetypal level to the weather, doesn't it? And that's beyond actually thinking about. And I know that, you know, if it's a nice sunny day, that immediately has an effect on me. If it's a nice, cold, fresh, frosty morning, has an effect. If it's a sort of like dull, wet, cold day, or like you say, turbulent. But anyway, was there anything other than just the observing of that that you were with that?
I think actually what really struck me was we're all living in such a backdrop of pandemic, and then suddenly there was this really distracting Paramananda talked a bit about absorption and just how easily it was to be completely absorbed and slightly delighted and engaged and involved in this power. It was, I suppose in a sense it was quite a pleasant change from the waters that we're swimming in at the moment. That was my sense.
Hello.
Hi, Andy.
Hello. Good afternoon, everybody. I've had a couple of moments in meditation over the last couple of days where I think my mind has just gone blank, and I'm not quite sure if I'm in deep meditation or just on the cusp of falling asleep, really. I don't know. Have you got any advice or explanation about what's going on? It seems to happen when I get really, really comfortable in my posture. So my leg tends to go numb or starts complaining. But then when it settles down and, you know, my posture just feels good, I feel like my spine is nice and straight. And I just have these moments, I just might go blank. And I think I'm still with it. I don't think I've drifted off, but I'm not sure.
Well, if you're going to say the posture is flat,
yeah.
If you're maintaining the posture, you're not going to sleep. So you know that.
Yeah.
Robert White album, and more blank than Frank. Anyway, but no, it's good. It's good, isn't it? You know. It's good. Yeah, blank. Yeah.
It feels really nice. But I just wonder if, you know,
blank's a bit of a negative word used, isn't it? That makes it sound more spiritual, doesn't it?
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you.
I think it's fine though. Yeah, I think we have these moments where there's nothing going on. That's great. It can be a bit shocking sometimes, you know, because we're not used to it, but I think you'll get used to it. If nothing's going on. There's still awareness there, but there's no sort of content, very little content.
Right, thank you.
I wouldn't worry about it, but as I say, you know, you would know if you were falling asleep. It's quite, you have this horrible, the muscles relax at the whole. You know, you get that horrible falling forward sensation there. So yeah, I think it's a good sign, basically. Take it as a good sign.
I'm just interested in what the actual experience was of blank. I mean, you use that word, what was it actually like in the moment?
Well, it was kind of that, really. It was like nothing. It wasn't unpleasant or like overly pleasant. I'd say it was more not unpleasant. Then I just sort of drift back into paying attention. And I don't know how long it lasted for, to be honest. It's happened several times. But the predominant experience I've got on my meditation is just trying to stop my legs complaining, really. Sometimes they're okay, and then other times they start to go numb and feel like they're just being compressed too much, you know, at the end of the meditation. And that seems to pull me out of it and back into discomfort.
So part of the blank was an absence of discomfort.
Yeah, just a sort of absence of everything, really.
Because I think sometimes we're used to having particular experiences in our meditation and then we don't have it. And sometimes that can be an absence of distractions or a particular, you know, maybe you've got a particular pain or discomfort or particular thoughts that's been going on for a while. Or, you know, if you want to talk about the hindrances, sometimes they're there and then they're not. But I think there's also sometimes we just get really relaxed or really absorbed, and then our mind isn't in that cognitive way of thinking in the same kind of way, so it can be an absence of that as well. But the fact that you said it was sort of when you're feeling relaxed and it's pleasant experience, I'd go with Paramananda, and I think it probably sounds quite positive, that.
Thank you.
Hello, it's Vimala Chitta here. I don't know quite how to say this, but I've been, I think whenever I think about the retreat, when I'm out and about, I kind of don't think of it as a retreat about the breath. I can't quite get that in my head. It just feels like a retreat about the heart. And that's what it seems to keep bringing me back to. And I know the breath is a way of coming, you know, coming back to oneself and the heart, but it's the way you talk about the breath, both of you, and the way you talk about meditation. I feel like that's really what it puts me in touch with, you know, a much sort of deeper sense of my heart or my kind of core feelings or... And it's something about, I think, the way that you're so un-techniquey. And so it feels so real and kind of organic and intuitive, but also very earthed, that that allows the heart in. I certainly have that experience anyway, and I'm really, really appreciating that, actually, the kind of depth that comes with that.
That's the next retreat.
That's what?
That's the next one's about the heart.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So this
I'm just
one,
ahead
one.
Of myself.
This one's about the breath, okay. No, I mean, you know, it's all about the heart, really, isn't it? I mean, you know, as you say, it's all about coming more fully into ourselves, isn't it? What, you know, what? Whatever we call that.
Yeah, and I've been amazed at how much the kind of combination of, you know, kind of being in your direct physical experience, but also including in the intuitive and the archetypal and the symbolic and the chanting and the, it you know, it seems to really get into that, you know, depth kind of feeling. So, yeah.
Well, it's lovely to hear that's having that effect.
Because
I guess that's what we would want and what certainly I want in my own practice. Nice to be described as being non-techniquey as well.
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I don't see how you can separate the heart really from anything, is it? We use different routes in, but it's always about that heart, the connection, as well as you know, well, I suppose it's, you know, wisdom and compassion and the heart, you can't separate them all, can you? And I do like the way how we can focus on the body and the breath, and then that brings the heart to the fore.
Yeah, because it feels like, well, it should be like that, but it isn't always. Sometimes it feels like one can split those things apart, you know, that they're not so integrated. That so there is something that in your, both of yours approach that does kind of bring those things together.
The Sufi people have that nice symbol, don't they? That the heart of the wings is a Sufi symbol. Mm. You know, little two wings, and the wings are the lungs. You know. So obviously, the lungs and the heart are very, they're more or less draped over the heart, aren't they, the lungs? Mm. They more or less sort of caress the heart. So I think, you know, the breathing does naturally, I mean, that's it, isn't it? It's a different, I think the split between the sort of, the split is more between the sort of emphasizing the kind of cognitive, isn't it?
Mm.
Where you can have an idea about breathing, it's kind of fine. It doesn't necessarily take you to the heart in a way. You know, the heart's an organ of feeling, isn't it? Symbolic, it's not. The thoughts of the heart are not cognitive in a way, you know what I mean? No, sort of image based or felt, aren't they? We have it's interesting, we have a kind of web, you know, sometimes talk about our emotional weather. Our heart is subject to the weather, isn't it, in a way?
Mm.
You know, we can have a restless or calm or.
I think it is very interesting, that connection between the heart and the breath, actually, on a sort of symbolic and metaphorical level, but also on a physiological level, because actually, you know, the heart is central to our breathing process, because it's pumping the blood, you know, through our vein, through our arteries and then our veins, you know, so the breath that we breathe in, the oxygen that we're breathing in, it's through the heart, the actions of the heart pumping away, but also the circulatory system that takes that oxygen to all our cells and takes away all of the carbon dioxide. So in a way, they are so linked on just a very basic physical level. But I think on a much more intuitive depth level, they are as well, aren't they? I mean, when we're breathing and we're not thinking, I'm breathing into stale, well, I mean, we were reflecting on that, but we're not necessarily all the time thinking about the physiological process and what it's doing, and we're exchanging gases and blah, blah, blah. But we have that sense of the breath, isn't it? Central to us and being alive, and the flow of the breath, the rhythm of the breath, just like we have the heartbeat is so sort of primal, so fundamental. And that's not about necessarily what the heart's doing physically in pumping it away, but we just sort of respond, doesn't it, to the heartbeat and to the breath. And I don't know what I'm saying, really, but...
It's slightly over exaggerated, the pump, the heart as a pump. Most of the blood is moved by the contraction of the veins, isn't it? It's quite a complicated, you know, they sort of decided, you know, when Harvey realized what the heart was doing, you know, it then just became this pump, but actually it's a lot know, physiologically, and it's much more of a sort of regulatory organ. It doesn't produce anything like the necessary pressure to move blood around the body. It's got a lot more sort of nuanced and role. You know, it's got a huge role in it. They're only just beginning to realise what the heart does. You know, it seems to have a very strong regulatory role in the functioning of the brain, because it regulates the production of certain hormones and chemicals that change brain function. But they're beginning to realize that the heart is sort of, has a very, a lot broader function than just being a pump, which is quite a sort of industrial image of the heart, isn't it?
Yes.
Obviously it's to some extent a pump, but
And the heart knows what the heart knows, and it often knows a lot more than our mind, doesn't it, or our cognitive mind.
Anyway, that, as I say, that's the next retreat.
Well, I remember yes, we don't want to be too literal with the titles.
Oh, don't we? Okay.
You're the one that told me that when I pitched this series of three.
Well, I was aware of how, really, I mean, I always try and choose my retreat titles fairly vague, so just do what I feel like at the time. Anyway, it's nice to hear that from you, Vim, that's taking you through your heart. Of course, that, heart means so much, very different things to different people, doesn't it? I like to think of your heart as also quite on a poetic level. A heart's quite a mobile organ, isn't it? And have the heart coming up into the throat, or the heart sinking down into the belly. It's quite sort of mobile in a way. Non-literal heart. And of course, I've got this. As I mean, just as they've got this sort of meaning, it's just core, hasn't it? It's also stand for what's at the core of us.
Just sending me off in all these different directions from the chitta. I'm just thinking like the heart's longing, and how, in a way, the heart contacts us with what's of value and what's meaningful and what's true to us if we listen. For me, part of the journey to listening more to my heart has been through bringing more awareness to the body and the breath. And my breathing body in meditation.
Hello, it's Liz here. It's interesting, isn't it, when somebody says something. I mean, different people have said something and different things are sparked. And it was interesting listening to what Vimla Luchita was saying about the heart then, and trying to find words for what my experience, you know, like, and you know, because it's finding the words sometimes, isn't it? But it's kind of taken me to a more spacious place. And I don't know if this sort of, I think this includes the heart, a sense of nothing being left undone. It feels like it includes me all. And that's what happens in the spaciousness somehow. But I'll go away and try and find some more words for myself around it. But I just liked how you've helped me into something that I didn't know there were perhaps words for.
Well, I mean, I think sometimes there's not words for things, is there? You know, you might find it in an image or, you know, a memory or, you know, it's not. Yeah, you know, I don't know, yeah. I don't think. I don't think the language of the heart, if we talk about the heart, is necessarily verbal, but of course, in order for us to talk about it, we have to make it verbal. I mean, we should be moved by things, can't we? And we can't necessarily find a language for it.
Oh yeah, that's really helpful, because I think sometimes where I have a sense of the heart being something I'm really deeply moved by.
Mm.
Perhaps what I'm experiencing at the moment is a more spacious heart.
Mm.
You know, more things can come in and pass through with in a different way.
Well, I think that's really important, because that is one of the, not so much in the, particularly in the Islamic tradition, but also in the European sort of Neoplatonic tradition, you know, the heart is understood as an organ of perception that things come into, you know. The world comes into us through the heart. It's more of like a sense organ.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's quite a useful way of understanding the heart. It's not just about our internal feeling, it's also what allows us to respond to the world.
You
know?
Oh, yeah.
What responds to beauty or whatever, you know. Traditionally the organ that kind of responds to the qualitative nature of the world, if you like. Which, you know, is lovely if that's spacious, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're too concerned about yourself, you don't have much room for anything else to be come in.
Well, I think in Buddhism, you know, we have citta, which is the heart and the mind together. I think we tend to translate it more in terms of mind and then forget about that heart dimension, but it could equally be translated the heart. And we talk about having big mind and little mind, and it could equally be talking about big mind and big heart and little heart, or contracted heart and expanded heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heart as wide as the world. I don't know where that phrase comes. It was the title of a book, wasn't it? Was it Sharon Salzberg or something? But I always loved that phrase. Anyway, I'm looking at the time and it is time to end. So thank you very much, everyone, for coming and sharing and reflecting together. And have a spacious evening.
Have a hearty evening, eh? Mm.
Thank you, Paramananda. Thank you, Bodhi Lila.